Today is December 2nd, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, an editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
You know, we took a week off, and I missed you while we were gone, Brian.
Oh, I missed you, too. I missed you, too. It was so sad. It was so sad.
I know there's an empty place in my heart.
Yes, but there is not an empty place in either of our stomachs because I think we both had some turkey.
Yes, absolutely. And, yeah, there's no empty space.
Explain that.
Yeah, I'm thinking it probably would. I just did the math in my head. Sure. We were gone. It was Thanksgiving week in the United States. Yep, that's it.
Yep, and at Thanksgiving holiday there, we traditional food for Thanksgiving is turkey.
And, of course, turkey makes you tired. So that's obviously why we had to take the week off, because, well, we were asleep.
Yes, exactly. And turkeys are also known for being it's a large bird, so it's also traditional to have leftover turkey, like turkey sandwiches and whatnot, in the days
right
following Thanksgiving. So, yeah, anyway, enough of the Thanksgiving. Let's mention our Platinum and Superpass contest.
Right, those are still going on. So everyone can go to the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com websites and sign up, what is it, once a day?
Once a day.
And the lucky winners will get a Platinum Pass or a Super Pass to Macworld Expo in January, which is fantastic.
And we'll have a direct link to the show notes, in the show notes, I mean?
Yes, we will.
Yes, or we do. For those who are hearing this, we do.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. We speak in a time warp.
Yes, we do speak in a time warp. But it's very cool. These passes are very expensive. I think $18.95 for one and $16.95 for the other, if I forget.
That sounds about right.
If I remember correctly. And get you access to all the goodies at the Macworld Expo. So, you know, if you have any interest in going, go sign up. Do it quick because time's running out.
Yes, it is.
And speaking of time running out, let's hit the news, eh?
Sounds like a great idea to me. Apple and Burst finally kissed and made up over their patent dispute. A new QuickTime security hole surfaced. A 3G-compatible iPhone may be on the way. The iPhone made its debut in France. Google wants to go wireless. And Steve Jobs was named the most powerful business person in the world.
Apple and Burst settled their two-year-long patent infringement battle this week. Apple got a non-exclusive license for Burst's patent portfolio, and Burst got a check for $10 million U.S. Burst originally filed a lawsuit against Apple, claiming the company was infringing on its patents with technology used in the iPod, QuickTime, iTunes, and the iTunes Store. Earlier in November, 14 of those 36 claims were thrown out, leaving 22 claims for Burst to pursue in court sometime in 2008. With the settlement worked out, however, those remaining claims won't ever go before a judge. Burst's legal fees in the case, however, will eat into the settlement Apple is paying. About $5.4 million of the $10 million will be used to cover the company's legal costs. Apple isn't the first company Burst has sued over patent infringement, however, but Big Cupertino was a tad more successful than at least one other Burst victim. The company previously went after Microsoft, which ultimately led to a $60 million lump sum settlement over the exact same technologies.
The security and virus protection software company Symantec issued a warning that Apple's QuickTime Player application may be open to malicious attacks. According to the company, both QuickTime 7.2 and QuickTime 7.3 on Mac OS X and Windows are vulnerable to attacks that could lead to denial of service conditions or the execution of unauthorized code on the user's computer. Symantec claims the threat stems from the way QuickTime Player handles RTSP response headers. A specially crafted header could create a buffer overflow, leaving computers vulnerable to attack because QuickTime apparently does not properly bounce check incoming data. Now, a few days after the announcement, a proof of concept code snippet designed to exploit the security flaw appeared on the internet. Although the code isn't exactly being used in attacks right now, it shows how an attack on a computer could, at least in theory, be launched. A patch for the potential flaw isn't available yet, so make sure you avoid viewing content of websites that you don't already know and trust.
Apple's iPhone has been dinged by some for using AT&T's slower edge wireless data technology instead of the faster 3G wire technology. AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson claims that will change when Apple releases a new model iPhone sometime in 2008. When asked about the possibility of a 3G-capable iPhone at a meeting in Santa Clara, California on Wednesday of this week, Mr. Stephenson commented, quote, "You'll have it next year," unquote. No word yet on how AT&T's search for a new CEO is progressing. He didn't know how the new iPhone will be priced and added that Apple CEO Steve Jobs would, quote-unquote, dictate what the price of the phone is. While Mr. Stevenson's comments could indicate that he is completely out of touch with the market and how Apple handles new product announcements, they could also have been a calculated shot across Apple's bow. Columnist Robert Cringely thinks Mr. Stevenson knew exactly what he was saying and wanted to send a message to Steve Jobs that Apple isn't as important to AT&T as he might think. Mr. Cringely hypothesized that the two companies are bickering and that AT&T is concerned that Apple may team up with Google to form its own wireless communication services that sidestep AT&T's cell service.
Apple and Orange launched the iPhone in France on November 29th, but some shoppers in some cities were able to get their hands on one several hours early. And they also had an opportunity that US and UK iPhone buyers don't get, the option of buying an unlocked iPhone. French law requires consumers have the choice to choose any cell carrier when they buy a cell phone, so two models will be available. French customers can purchase an iPhone with an iPhone-specific service plan from Orange that'll cost €399. €549 will get them a phone with one of Orange's other service plans, or €649 will get them an iPhone without a service plan. And unlocking an iPhone so it can be used with other cell carrier services costs €100. If you buy a locked iPhone and later decide to unlock it, you can pay the €100 to free your handheld from Orange. Now, despite the added complexity that goes along with the iPhone options in France, Orange is expecting to sell 100,000 units by the end of December.
When the FCC put the 700 MHz wireless spectrum on the auction block in January, Google will be there. The company, best known for its internet search and data mining technologies, will be bidding for an FCC license to use the soon-to-be-available frequencies, which means it will have to pony up at least $4.6 billion and likely even more to come out with a winning bid. The spectrum will likely be used for wireless internet and cell phone services, regardless of who wins the auction, creating new avenues for wireless internet access. Opening the spectrum was designed to benefit customers since the license winner will be required to allow consumers, or customers that is, to use any device they want and download any application they like to any mobile services, mobile devices that they wish on the network. Google must file its application to participate in the auction with the FCC by December 3rd of this year. The auction will officially begin on January 24th, 2008 and could run for several months.
And Apple CEO Steve Jobs has been called many things over the years, and now Fortune has added something else to that list. The most powerful business person in the world. Fortune's list of the 25 most powerful business people starts off with Steve Jobs and says, quote, "During the first two decades of his remarkable 30-year career, the Apple Inc. founder twice altered the direction of the computer industry," end quote. And it added that after returning to Apple in 1997, he changed the consumer electronics industry with the iPod, impacted the recording industry and Hollywood with the iTunes Store and Pixar, changed the view of retail with Apple's brick-and-mortar stores, and set the cell phone industry on its ear with the iPhone. Fortune continued, quote, that's five industries that Jobs has upended: computers, Hollywood, music, retailing, and wireless phones. At this moment, no one has more influence over a broader swath of businesses than Jobs, end quote.
And now it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
Indeed. And I think it's just too easy of a target for us. We can't pass this one up. We have to talk about Randall Stephenson and his iPhone comments from earlier in the week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, for one thing, the last thing I would want for my business to be dependent upon would be Apple as a partner.
You know, yeah, that totally makes sense. That great products, but you do have to walk on eggshells.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at what Apple did with or to Motorola, depending on how you want to look at it. They teamed up with them to make iTunes work on a couple of their different phones. What was it? Was the Sliver and the Rocker?
The Rocker, that's right.
Yeah, and, you know, and it was pretty much
a dud.
Not a winning solution. It was kind of a dud. And then Apple went ahead and took what they learned from that experience and added that into their iPhone effort.
They did. So Motorola, in a sense, was kind of a guinea pig that Apple was experimenting on.
Absolutely. I have zero doubt of that. I don't have any inside information or, you know, specific knowledge, but I am quite comfortable with the conclusion that Apple did that on purpose just to be able to learn some more and be able to use that information. I don't really think that they had any long-term plans to stick with Motorola in that capacity.
You know, those Cupertino guys, they're pretty clever.
They are pretty clever. And so you look at AT&T Apple has a 5-year exclusive deal with them, but, you know, of course, we don't know the specific.
Right. And
of that agreement. And I would be worried if I was AT&T also that Apple might team up with Google to go ahead and just have their own cell phone service.
You know, even if Apple doesn't create a cell phone service with Google, I think AT&T needs to be a little bit worried, because once the developers can start writing legitimate or Apple-blessed applications for the iPhone and iPod Touch, I mean, what's the first thing most people are going to download? It's going to be a voice over IP application. And that's bad news for AT&T.
Well, true enough. But, I mean, you know, got to realize that AT&T is still making their money.
Oh, sure. But this also makes the iPod Touch a more viable alternative to the iPhone for someone that wants to be able to use the device as a phone but doesn't want to pay for an iPhone. Of course, then there's also the part, how do you get the audio into an iPod Touch? And I'm sure someone will figure that out.
I have very little doubt that Apple's going to do everything it can to keep that from happening.
Like I said, they are very clever people in Cupertino.
There are clever people in Cupertino, and of course, you know, that might end up being yet another leapfrog war, but, you know, I don't really think that's going to end up being much of an issue. We'll have to see how it goes, but, you know, the real thing to me is this notion of one of Apple's partners pre-announcing an unannounced product.
Yeah, I chuckled when I saw the news.
Yeah, you know, and if anything, AT&T should be worried about Apple, you know, deliberately shafting them now, just because that's what Apple does to partners that do things like mention unannounced products.
Yeah, they do. You know, I think it's safe to say
ATI.
You know, I think it's safe to say that a 3G iPhone is in the works. It makes sense. Now, when that's supposed to really come out, well, who knows? But to jump the gun and announce it like Mr. Stephenson did, my feeling is that he was acting in the way that cell phone companies traditionally have, where they do whatever they want, and he doesn't get really how this whole new market works. And I don't...
Well, he doesn't get how working with Apple works.
Right. And I really don't think personally that this was so much about shooting a warning across Apple's bow. I think it was more about how AT&T has always done business, and that's just what he did.
All right, so let me play devil's advocate.
Oh, please do.
I think that you're right, but let's play devil's advocate. And perhaps this was a message that Apple actually wanted, and by Apple, I mean Steve Jobs, wanted Mr. Stevenson to deliver to the market for him.
Okay.
I don't know what the goal of that would be unless it's simply to, I don't think that's correct, because for one thing, the last thing I think that Apple is going to want to ever do, and this is one of the reasons why they do try to control so utterly their product information, they're not going to want to slow down existing iPhone sales for people that are waiting for a 3G unit to come out.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, that's that, and that is, like I said, that's precisely the reason that Apple has this history of being control freaks when it comes to product information.
And so far, it's worked pretty well for them. There's been some markets where that's not a good thing for Apple overall. Like if getting in the enterprise market, not a good move.
Yeah.
But in the consumer market.
It's going to be very difficult.
Yeah. But in the consumer market, it's been working really well. And people buy the products that are available now. And then when the next big thing comes out and it's a surprise, it works great for Apple because now there's a new product for people to go out and buy. There's almost always a media frenzy that gets them publicity that you simply can't buy. It's a really good formula.
Literally priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I think that the AT&T announcement, and I'm doing air quotes here, announcement, isn't going to have a huge impact on iPhone sales, because a lot of the people that want to buy an iPhone now are going to buy an iPhone now. The people that want to wait for a 3G iPhone, well, they'll continue to wait, of course. And then there will be a small percentage that go, oh, well, if there's a new one coming out, I'll wait now. But I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on sales.
No, probably not.
No.
Probably not. It's just it will be interesting to see if there's any kind of fallout. I think that's really probably the most interesting aspect. And maybe it's only for those of us who watch Apple for a living, but it's just going to be interesting to see what kind of fallout or further developments might come out of the chief executive officer of Apple's major partner for this product line pre-announcing an unannounced product by 6, 9, 10 months.
Right. We might be able to get a better idea of Apple's relationship with AT&T come Macworld Expo. And what I'm referring to is the Steve Jobs keynote that will be on the Tuesday morning of Macworld Expo.
Yep, stay tuned to the Mac Observer for full coverage.
That's right. We will be there and technology permitting, live coverage.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think that whatever Steve Jobs says on stage at Macworld Expo, and whether or not it includes AT&T, and whether or not Mr. Stevenson actually comes out on stage during the presentation, that'll say a lot about how healthy Apple's relationship with AT&T is.
That is very – dude, that's a good point. That is a good point because I think that all other things being equal – Steve Jobs is absolutely going to want to bring someone from AT&T out on the floor just to talk about how successful the iPhone has been.
Right. Yeah. Now, my advice for Apple is to make sure that whoever comes out on stage from AT&T has rehearsed their speech a little bit better than okay, you remember the singular speech we had to live through at Macworld Expo last year? I don't want to do that again.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty painful.
That was horrible.
But that wasn't Mr. Stevenson.
No, it wasn't. So hopefully we won't have to deal with a presentation like that last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this year.
All right, let's move on, though. That's pretty esoteric, and we've got the Google Wireless Auction Bid, which kind of, you know, in the same area.
Right. And
here.
Now,
what do you think?
What I think is that Google wants to get a hold of the bandwidth that's coming, or excuse me, the radio frequencies that are coming available, because they have a master plan for how they want to actually control the frequencies, which totally makes sense. And I think that under the table right now, they already have a bunch of pending deals in place with companies, and that may include Apple. So that once they win the auction, assuming they do, and they can start controlling that radio spectrum, they can announce all of these deals that take advantage of devices that already use Google technologies and devices that will be using Google's new Android cell phone development platform. And I think that there may very well be something in store with Apple and the iPhone. And I think that there's a lot of companies that don't like that idea.
Possibly. However, Google's business model for their whole wireless platform is completely and totally at odds with Apple's cell phone strategy.
Sure.
I mean, everything that Google's wanting to do is precisely everything that Apple doesn't want to do. Open platform, ad-sponsored stuff, let people do what they want and stuff. I mean, you know, Apple's all about, you know, think differently Steve's way. And
yeah.
So it is possible. So it is certain that Apple and Google work well together.
Right.
Right? Eric, what's Eric's last name? Eric
Schmidt.
Schmidt, thank you. Eric Schmidt is on Apple's board.
Right.
Right? They have a good working relationship. The two companies have partnered on all kinds of very successful little side projects, like the Google Maps for the iPhone, for instance.
Right.
And so I'm not saying that the two companies don't like each other or that there's some kind of a problem there. What I'm saying is that their overall platform strategies for the cell phone market are completely and utterly different. Now, that said, it is also possible that Google can have Apple be a partner to use a certain portion of that spectrum for their own thing.
I think that's very likely.
Well, it's the only thing that's possible for them to partner with us on. I didn't say that very well. It's the only possible way for them to partner here, because like I said, they are otherwise at odds.
Right. And okay, so when I was saying that there's probably a Google-Apple deal in place involving this somehow, that's pretty much where it would fit in. And it would be something where Apple gets to grab their little section of this bandwidth for whatever it is that they're going to be doing. There's something in it for Google. We don't know what yet. But then there's everything else that Google will have control over that will be used for Google's other interests.
Right. And I'll just go on the record as saying that I think that Apple should leave the running of cell phone networks to the cell phone carriers.
I would have to agree with you on that. I think if Apple got in the business of running the cell network, that would open up a whole can of what the hell that they don't want.
Yeah, it's just it's a whole nother layer of support, and you know, just it's a market that is very unlike the markets that they do so well. And it's not to say that Apple couldn't turn around and become good at this sort of thing. I just think it's a sort of distraction that they don't need.
Right. Okay, now I have a question for you, Brian. What do you think?
Yes.
What do you think the odds are that Apple would want a chunk of the 700 megahertz spectrum so that they could create a more robust iTunes Wi-Fi store, something that people could download movies and music to their iPhone or iPod Touch from anywhere, and they wouldn't even have to worry about whether or not there's a Wi-Fi connection or what we have now, which is you can't even do or use the iTunes store through Edge.
Balderdash. That's what I think.
Okay.
I think that there's not enough money for Apple to operate a nationwide network for the iTunes store alone. Does that make a lick of sense to me? I mean, running a nationwide wireless network, that's going to be a big deal.
Oh, it definitely is.
It's going to be a really, really big deal. It's going to require a lot of money. Of course, Apple has, you know, more money than
we do.
Well, I would, yeah, certainly more money than you and I do. I was about to say more money than God, but then Bill Gates actually does have more money.
Right.
Than Apple.
So I guess that would imply that there's several people that have more money than God.
Yes, there are. Yeah, I guess so. So looking at the big picture here, you got to figure that the iTunes store itself is not going to be worth having some kind of dedicated network. Now, having some kind of broader network tied into .Mac or a broader ISP service of some sort, or having, you know, if you can make that picture bigger, yeah, I can see Apple wanting to get into that. You know, I've been actually thinking about doing a column on roughly, you know, how we're finally overcoming the chokehold that Microsoft has put on the operating systems market. In particular, this the whole notion of having .Mac manage all of my locations for all of my computers so that I can browse them without having to know, you know, anything about the IP addresses or firewalls or anything like that.
Right.
That is just so cool. And it's such a tiny little subtle thing. It's such a it's not the kind of thing that's going to turn the world on its ear, but it is the kind of thing that computers should be doing for us.
Yeah.
And the damage that Microsoft did to the market with its predatory practices and its without going off in too much of a tangent any more than I already have, everything that it did to basically put everybody but Apple out of business, we're finally getting to the point where we're going to be moving past that. And of course, it's mostly Apple that's doing that moving. So what's my point here as I ramble off into nowhere? If you start looking at other directions that Apple can add services and make money from those services, yeah, I can see Apple wanting some of that spectrum. Otherwise, no.
Well, I can't wait to see what comes out of this.
Indeed. And, you know, I kind of like to hear you say that thing again.
Oh, about Steve Jobs?
Uh-huh.
The most powerful business person in the world.
I like that. Yeah, fun with GarageBand. fun with GarageBand. Yeah, I'd have to say that they're pretty much right.
You know, I kind of have to agree. And now, I'm sure some people say, well, you know, if Steve Jobs is so powerful, how come... Or how come we don't see Mac OS X as the dominant operating system on the planet? Well, because that's not the point. The point is he's actually managed to have a major influence and impact on a wide range of industries. And that's not something that a lot of other people can say. I mean, there were some of the other names that were on the list well below Steve Jobs were big names. And they did include Bill Gates, but... You know, we're looking at someone that has made an impact on a very broad range of industries, and including industries that are very visible to the average consumer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I mean, and we're talking about power here. We're not talking about market share. So, you know, I don't ever want to see Apple have Mac OS X or whatever future versions of the operating system have a dominant market share. I don't want to see that. It's not going to be good for Apple, and it's not going to be good for the platform. I want to see Apple having to, you know, fight claw for every bit of market share it can, and to be able to make a profit while it's doing that. And that's not nothing, folks. That's a huge thing, because the combination of Microsoft and Dell basically killed all profits in the computing manufacturing side.
Right.
You know, ending all R&D. I've said this scores of times over the years at the Mac Observer, but Apple is the only company doing any real R&D other than Intel and Microsoft. You know, Dell, your Gateways, your HPs, none of those guys are doing anything more than looking for cheaper ways to make crappy, ugly computers.
Right, that's true. They're grabbing off-the-shelf components, pretty much, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they're going to the lowest bidder for everything mm-hmm. they need every week. And, you're just not getting a good product.
You're not getting a good product. And that Apple, once Steve Jobs came back, was able to redefine how his company was competing. That's amazing. As a matter of fact, Jeff and I were discussing this briefly. Fortune said that – is it Fortune or Forbes? Fortune. Thank you. Fortune said that
glad
the first two decades of his remarkable 30-year career, the Apple Incorporated founder twice altered the direction of the computing industry. I would say it's three times. The Apple II, which, of course, was actually built by – Steve Wozniak, but you never would have made it to market had it not been for Steve Jobs.
Right.
Then you've got the Mac OS, the original Mac in 1984, and then you've got the way he again redefined Apple and redefined how Apple was competing and redefined how everybody else was going to compete in the process when he came back to Apple in 1997. So I'm going to call that three times. And everybody follows what Apple is doing. The entire rest of the market looks to see what Apple is doing in terms of services and software and hardware.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because if you look historically at things Apple has done, like let's look at the original iMac.
Mm-hmm.
For Mac users, that was kind of a scary thing. SCSI went away. ADB went away. And we ended up with FireWire and USB. But we also lost the floppy disk drive at the same time. Now, oh my God. Yeah. Now, the rest of the computer market was flipping. And they're saying, how can you make that? That's not even a real computer. It doesn't have a floppy drive on it. And you're using this crazy little port thing to plug stuff into. You know, what's wrong with you Cupertino people? Well, of course, now most of the major PC manufacturers, they don't put floppy drives on the computer now, unless it's like an add-on thing. And USB is an industry standard now. And I just find it very interesting that the same companies that always follow Apple's lead will complain about what Apple's doing and say it's wrong or it's stupid, but then they all just line right up and follow along.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And that's part of that power. And, you know, the same thing can be said with the digital media device market, which Apple did not create but legitimized,
right?
You know, made into a large market. Certainly online retailing of music and now video.
Right.
All those things, you know, everything they said is absolutely correct. And I think that Steve Jobs is one of the most powerful people. Business people in the world, and that is fairly amazing when you get right down to it that we've gotten to this point. You know, if you look at 1996, you remember we were all hoping that Apple was going to buy B.
Oh my God, yes, BOS. That was just like the coolest thing at the time.
Mm-hmm. It was it was a great operating system. It was doing some really, really cool things, and you know, it would have been kind of interesting had Jean-Louis Gasset come back to Apple and brought the BOS and was once again in charge of Apple's direction. You know, we would have had a completely different company. We also might have had a really, really cool operating system coming out of Apple. So, you know, but when that was going on, no one was talking about bringing Steve Jobs and next back.
No, and people didn't really know what this whole next thing was that Steve was working on. And
well, a lot of people did.
Yeah, okay. A lot of the mainstream Mac users didn't.
Certainly not. And mainstream folks in general.
Didn't. Right. But the next machines were, they were pretty cool. They were revolutionary.
Well, in their day, by the time that Apple bought Next, Next was no longer making any hardware. You know, they were only making the software for Next Step and Open Step, which of course, you know, games like Quake were developed on, but that's another story. And you know, no one in the Mac world, no one really was talking about bringing Steve Jobs back. And then, you know, it ended up happening, and he's just been ripping and roaring through the business world since then. And, you know, you look at it, it's, I've been watching CNBC again. I hadn't watched CNBC for a while, but recently I've been watching a lot of CNBC, mm-hmm. and Apple is talked about every single day. Apple is like, has become this bellwether. I mean, all of the anchors, Kramer talks about Apple. Kramer talks about how Apple, RIM, and Google are, Research in Motion, that is, and Google are, you know, his three companies that he thinks
they're his horsemen companies. Managers.
Yeah, exactly. And how, you know, that people are, the fund managers are going to be loading up with Apple, Google, and RIM to, as Kramer says, to show how smart they were. to, you know, before the end of the quarter. And that sort of thing happens all the time. But, you know, Apple was the joke of Wall Street.
It really was for a while.
Not too long ago. Not too long ago at all. And it's just amazing to see how the business world is looking, the finance world, I should say, is looking at Apple right now. It's amazing to see their profits. It's amazing to see their market share. Mac OS operating system, I'm sorry, Mac hardware sales are growing in leaps and bounds, gaining market share left and right. Apple's making tons of money on the iPod. You know, it's all this stuff, and it is, you know, rightly or wrongly, I may get really tense when I think about Apple banning who does the dummies books?
Oh, Wiley Press.
Wiley, binding Wiley Press's books from the Apple stores because they had the audacity to publish Icon. You know, I may get tense about Apple trying to go after reporter sources, and you know, which potentially could have had just a catastrophic effect on online media. You know, I may get tense about things like that, but you look at the business successes that Apple's had, and it's just been amazing.
It really has. And, you know, actually, you bring up a good point, the kind of ugly things that have happened with Apple, like when they went after the journalist sources relating to – what was it called? Asteroid? No.
Yeah, it was about
Asteroid. Asteroid, that's right. Yeah, and what ended up coming out of that was – no, Apple cannot strong arm people or journalists into revealing their sources, but it also
Apple largely gave that up, though.
Right, but it also set up a precedent that it hadn't been there before, which is that the online media sources need to be looked at just the same as print and TV and radio.
Well, but I don't think that precedent has been set. That was what I was worried about, was the precedent being set up that we weren't.
Right. That's what they wanted
do. That's what they wanted to do, yeah.
And
I was very worried about that precedent being established. Now, that precedent, in a positive way, has still not been established. It really hasn't been tested yet because Apple took such a hit in PR terms.
They did.
Over that whole issue that, you know, the company just eventually went ahead and dropped it. And, you know, you have Apple Insider and ThinkSecret still plugging along today.
Right. So, yeah. So we don't actually have...
As a matter of fact, go
ahead. Okay. So we don't actually have case law saying that online journalists are journalists. But what we have is the foundation, the framework for that, which is something that we didn't have with the same structure before Apple decided to go after, it was what, Apple Insider and O'Grady's PowerPage?
Yeah, and ThinkSecret.
Right.
Different cases. And I mean, it was all the three sites were being handled in different ways.
Right. So actually, there you go. We need to add another thing to the list for the different areas that Steve Jobs has had some type of impact.
Huh. Well, that's not business, and I wouldn't call it a success.
Well, no, I certainly wouldn't call it a success, but I would definitely call it an influence. Not the influence he wanted, but you can't win them all.
Indeed. Hey, folks, if you have anything that you want to comment on, add, or question, why don't you send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. Remember, as Jeff usually says, but I stole it from him this week, succinctness is next to steveliness. But we want to hear from you. We would very much like to hear anything that you have to say. And depending on what it is, we'll probably get it up on the air.
Yeah, we will. And, you know, that wasn't quite as easy to say as you thought it was, huh?
No, it wasn't.
And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom. That's recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And of course, as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.